that's why I'm not really concerned about the numbers, because even if it is just us and Nigeria, which I think it's going to be more than that, but let's just say it's us, Nigeria, and Rwanda, it doesn't matter because this is orthodoxy. And in the end of the day, Jesus is going to protect his church. We're going to thrive, and they're going to die.
Welcome to the Stand Firm podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm joined, as always, by Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Great. Thanks, Nick.
Well, we're going to jump right into it. J.D., you are our man on the ground and in the press room at G26 in Abuja, Nigeria. Right. We're going to hear from you in just a second, but we wanted to address the news of the morning, or I guess last night. Dean of the province, Julian Dobbs, has sued Bishop Herrick Jones. And there's a lot of commentary happening on Twitter about how can a Christian sue another Christian? Isn't this terrible for the ACNA? And we thought we'd just spend a couple minutes reacting to that before we get to the news breaks from Abuja.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in 1 Corinthians 6, what's happening is that within the congregation in Corinth, people are having disputes with one another. And then to solve those disputes, they're going to civil magistrates without even trying to solve those things in the church. And so the question is this what's happening here? And no, well, in some ways it is. I mean, I guess you could say Bishop Jones, by filing civil suit and making public accusations in the secular courts against Bishop Dobbs, has done that. But the question then for Dobbs, for Bishop Dobbs, and all, I mean, I guess the ACNA as well, is once you have these scurrilous, slanderous accusations made in a public forum, what do you do? Because it's important, the New Testament tells us in various places that you have a good reputation among outsiders. If you're an overseer, that's one of the qualifications, is you have, you're seen as not being corrupt, right? And so an accusation publicly made in the public square of corruption, if it's a lie, needs to be shown to be a lie.
In the public square.
In the public square, right? Exactly. And I don't know any other way to do that. I mean, Bishop Dobbs could just say, "No, it's not true," which he has said. But the way to vindicate, to have this thing vindicated, and to have his reputation cleared, is to have it legally shown that he's been lied about and slandered. So I think it's a misapplication of 1 Corinthians 6 in this point to Bishop Dobbs. I think it would have been a good application to Bishop Jones in the first place, but here it's, yeah, I don't think Bishop Dobbs has a choice.
Has there been a lot of discussion online? I've been blissfully disconnected for the past
There have been a few usual suspects.
Yeah. Usual
suspects saying, "Oh, look, he's a hypocrite. He's violating 1 Corinthians chapter 6.
Bishop Dobbs continuing to make all the right people mad.
Well, they were really happy about this. I think a number of people are really, really sad that Ian Shapiro stopped writing articles or hasn't written an article lately, and so they're trying to stir up the muckrake as much as they can. So
yeah, well, that's like the only thing the Washington Post is making any sales for there. It's so sad. I used to read that cover to cover back in college. It was like the paper of note. And now,
yeah. Once Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon retired, there was no future there. Well, JD, what's going on in Abuja? How can you update us?
Yeah, well, we just got finished with what by all accounts was a short Nigerian opening service. It was only 3, clocked in at right under 3 hours, but it was the opening convocation. I can send you some pictures. It was glorious. I mean, I've never been to Nigeria. I mean, the first time I'd ever been to Africa was last time we went to GAFCON, but it's been inspiring so far. I mean, it literally just started. I mean, I've been here a day and a half and sort of getting over jet lag and enjoying the giant compound, which, you know, is there's a lot of active and armed security all around, which is,
Well, yeah.
it's like being in Ben Gurion Airport or something. You know, it's like,
Nigeria has not been a particularly safe place for Christians these last little.
no, it was unfortunate that I signed up for the US Embassy, like safe traveler thing, and like basically got every 6 hours like reconsider travel, reconsider like, only necessary travel. But so yeah, so it's been, as our listener knows, I finagled an invitation, which I'm grateful for, because there really aren't that many clergy here as part of the press corps, and so I've had more than one bishop say, "Why are you here?" I said, "Well, I was
Perhaps
like,
you don't haven't heard of
that's
Stand
right.
Firm's
You must
Reach.
not be our listener. That's right." But it was glorious. There was, I think, Paul Bishop Donison, who really has put a lot of work into this. It's remarkable, the logistics of this many people, particularly given the security protocols and stuff. But I think he said tonight they haven't fully, well, I know, for instance, like Bishop Ashley Null hasn't arrived yet, so that'll be at least one more. But I think he said there was 350 some odd bishops have officially registered, and then there's 450 sort of hangers on total, which I guess I would be part of that too. So yeah, it was glorious. It was like a 35-minute procession into the cathedral, and I think it's being live streamed. You could probably put the link up, or I could
Sure, I
send
can
it to you
find
if
it.
anyone's interested. But the whole theme is choose this day, and Bishop Archbishop Nakuba from Nigeria, Nakuba, I think that's right, isn't it?
I think it's right.
Yes, I'm sorry, I keep wanting to say Akinola, but that's dating me now. Gave a sermon, on that theme, as you can imagine, and the emphasis, it turns out, is going to be on, both choose this day, and then a heavy emphasis on, not serving two masters, because part of the underlying challenge that we've noted, at least since maybe before Kigali, is going to be the financial disincentives that the Church of England and the Western churches are going to put, the pressure they're going to put on these GAFCON provinces and dioceses, sort of a carrot and stick type thing, because they don't like it. And a lot of these dioceses rely on, foreign aid in all sorts of ways, and we're gonna have to figure out how to at least compensate. I think there's gonna be some hard conversations, like with any budget, like what's absolutely necessary, but also developing alternative funding sources. Essentially, I mean, I actually talked to a guy who's Anglican AID from Sydney. I might interview him, but I keep reminding people, like halfway through sensitive conversations, I'm like, I'm actually here with the press, and so can I get, how do you spell your last name? And then I was like, I'm just kidding. I'm sort of. But no, he was saying that he basically is trying to, raise, I think they have $8 million now, which is not nothing, but of course, compared to Trinity Wall Street and, the Anglican Consultative Council or whatever, it's nothing. But I know for a fact, I know it's such a small world, just like in Kigali. A friend of mine who was the pl church planter of the English church in Leipzig, who I met many years ago when I was in Berlin, and I had, Matt, you'll love this, it was the first 45-minute sermon I ever preached, and I basically just told him I'll have to string three 15-minute sermons together because I don't know how to do that. But we became friends and have reconnected. He's now the Bishop of the Horn of Africa. His name is Martin Reeks Williams. He's a great guy. But I talked to him, and for instance, he's one of these new bishops with a relatively small diocese, obviously historic, but still, who is heavily dependent on this sort of foreign aid. So that's going to be a major concern, I think. And of course, like we know in the Episcopal Church, and I don't want to disparage the people who aren't here, but I, as you can imagine, I'm not sympathetic to, to the property argument. Not very sympathetic. Now, to be fair, when we're talking about, us losing our building, perhaps, we're not also maybe simultaneously saying and our shelter, or and our actual possibility of livelihoods. And so there's a pathos there, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about it, frankly, just because, not only for prayer's sake, but also as we As I mentioned to one bishop tonight, I said, I was like, we're not really like adversarial press here. Like we've nailed our colors to the mast, to the ACNA, which of course is the, means we're going down with the ship, I mean, or not. Oh, what's the guy? I just watched the dirt biker, close your eyes and let Jesus settle it out at the end. Like just go. And so I was like, so we're here for it. But I think it's going to be equal parts sobering and encouraging as they act, because the whole point of this conference, and that's why it was prominently bishops, is essentially a two part, like one part pep rally, kind of galvanize, get the team together. And there's no, as we know, Zoom can only do so much. But if you don't have a actual physical relationship to build on in particular, there's not much. Zoom is at this point, you think you might just be talking to AI. So there's part of that is building relations, and then they're going to have a statement, and there's going to be some sort of attestation to it, which of course is just another layer of commitment and responsibility. I don't know exactly what the statement will be, and I'll be here for it, but I do know that the other part of it is basically just a very straightforward and practical discussions of how does this work? Like if you are, if you are a bishop, what does it look like to restructure your diocese? Like, I don't know if there'll be canon lawyers or legal people involved, but of course that'll be part of the conversation. Because I was even struck tonight, I'm rethinking, I told someone I've been rethinking the whole Christian nationalism debate in light of rethinking my rejection of the Erastian nature of the Church of England, because I saw the whole, I mean, essentially what's happened here in Nigeria, at least as far as I can observe so far, and apologies to any cultural anthropologists who think I'm a ham-fisted Westerner, but like the church has operated the way that the church had intended, in my opinion, to permeate the society, to hold the, like we had the Supreme Court justices and the local magistrates were all in like the front row of the service tonight. And, of course, they have their sphere of responsibility, but it's overlapping, or at least there's a Venn diagram with the church, and then of course you have the and so it was really beautiful to watch, because I mean the hymnody was from, our sort of Anglican tradition. It was in English, and it was just this beautiful blend of a, Nigerian kind of themed 1662 service, but nevertheless it was certainly recognizably Anglican. And to see the expectation, like I talked to my friend Bishop Campicha from Northern Kenya, and I mentioned to him that I've mentioned him in more than one sermon about Christian nationalism, because I say whatever you want to call it or what you're afraid of, I got a bishop friend in Northern Kenya that's hoping all of the things you're afraid of will in fact happen. Like, people will come to the Lord, there will be laws that will be more just, like judges will repent, policemen will stop fleecing you, everyone will be convicted and become a Christian, and therefore then the town, cities, countries, and nation will. So call it whatever you want, but he's certainly not a white Christian nationalist, so anyway, it's, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I mean, I've been given, I gave you all the talking points. I think that it's I think that it's going to be, like we said 3 years ago, making commitments is something, but walking them out is really where the challenge lies. And I'm grateful that to a bishop so far, I've been encouraged that there's some real sobriety about the cost that's being counted. But of course the counterpoint is, what's the alternative? I mean, you could try to go the route of the Episcopal Church, of the Church of England, and objectively speaking, that destroys a church. Theologically speaking, that invalidates and abdicates your actual call to ministry. And so, the only pragmatic reason to not do this would be for short-term, sort of worldly security. And of course I'm not saying that's not a real concern, but there's seems to be a number of people who and the bishops are, like, many of them are younger than certainly younger than you, Matt. They're even younger than I am. but and it's encouraging to see that, they're here, and so yeah, we'll see.
Has there been any discussion of the Global South bishops.
Not yet. I'm interested. So I've got a couple of questions that I'm going to be at least lovingly teasing out. One of them is not all the GAFCON primates are here. And I'm sort of interested in, I have heard some various reasons why, but it's like every, as we know, I mean, people are people, and there's all sorts of inner, there's layer upon layer upon layer of these things. So that's one interesting aspect. And then I haven't, no one's addressed the Global South directly, or at least I don't know if it'll be discussed, but obviously that's kind of the elephant in the room, in terms of, because they were certainly at Kigali, and that was a big deal, and things have changed since then. And I'm not, I'll be interested to find out. I'm gonna put on my sleuthing hat. I did bring a like a hat, one of those bowler hats, and some glasses with a fake nose, and a pack of cigarettes. So I'm gonna be kind of lurking around.
A flower that's actually a microphone.
That's right. That's right. And I'm speaking to my boutonniere, please.
Well,
Yeah,
do
but
you think that the this is probably too early for you to answer this question too, but the theme Choose This Day can't help but make me think that there's going to be some push to asking provinces to make a choice between the worldwide Anglican Communion and what they're calling the global Anglican Communion, for which they're electing a chairman tomorrow. Do you have a sense that's the hope, is that after this there will be a clearer distinction between those two?
Well, I mean, again, I don't, I haven't, I don't know, but I could certainly, I could surmise that they're at least, if not an official something you sign, at least an appeal towards that end, because the Global Anglican Communion, of course, we have analogies to that, the Methodists. I mean, they just did this, and so I'm sure that some of these guys even have colleagues, within their sphere of relations, wherever they're coming from, that they probably stuck with the Global Methodists, or now Global Methodists instead of United Methodists. So yeah, I think there's precedent for it, and we'll see. I mean, I think that what has been interesting is that the kind of destabilization of the ACNA has had sort of ripple effects across the GAFCON communion, not entirely positive, as you can imagine. Bishop Dobbs is doing a great job, kind of shoring up the leadership. But that being said, I think I don't think I appreciated the kind of the stabilizing influence that ACNA has been for the Global South, or for GAFCON. And I think that it was a reminder to me that that the work that we're doing, lovingly, with all humility, and as error prone as any human, nevertheless, the hopes that we can strengthen our house and shore up our own province, will only has dramatic and significant impact on the GAFCON movement in general. I mean, we're not the only people, obviously, but we do have established, with both Archbishop Duncan and Foley, a pretty good track record of leadership and sort of and input and influence. And so it was good to see, it's been good to see Bishop Dobbs. He's handling himself manfully, as a prayer book would say. And Bishop Mark's here, and there's a lot of ACNA, I think 32 ACNA bishops. I haven't gotten a full head count. I'm sure somebody has.
All four of our bishops are there.
Yes. I haven't seen Alan yet, but I'm sure maybe he's coming in. But
I mean,
Bishop Manise, got to spend time with him, and Bishop Reed, and Bishop Love, and it's been fun. I was just like a fanboy. I'm like bringing around my tippet, getting people to sign
I
it.
understand some people being discouraged that there's not just an overflowing, overwhelming movement of support from all of the primates in the world for the global Anglican Communion. But frankly, I don't care. I think I don't care if it's just Nigeria and the ACNA in the end of the day, because I can't the I the communion at this point is so illegitimate and so has so apostatized that there's nothing there. I mean, so I don't under I'm clearly I'm baffled by these primates who have orthodox convictions and who want to remain with Canterbury. I mean, I especially now with Mullally as the Archbishop, it just seems. I mean, I'm not totally baffled, of course. I know I understand the money situation. I'm not saying they're bought, but I can see how it'd be impractical to just cut off.
I think there's some cultural aspects to it also. I think that there's a, an Anglophilic, there's an Angloph sort of nature, particularly countries around the Commonwealth, that I think, is being exposed as perhaps in certain people, and I won't venture any names, but in certain leadership positions, more important, at least currently more important than biblical fidelity and faithfulness. And the difficulty, what I want to tell them is, like, having lived in the West and watched the total invalidation of any God-given authority to these churches over decades, is that, it's not like they're the only problem they have is that they are sort of embracing sexual deviancy. Like, that's just downstream of a rot, or that's the rotten fruit of a cancerous center that will in fact eviscerate, like, your church. Like, this is what, this idea of like all of the Western progressive ideas, about men and women, about money, about children, about well, those are big things right there, right? I mean, all of those ideas that have been embraced by the progressive church will, or at least by extension, be infiltrating your churches and is going to poison your people. I mean, that's just what's going to happen. And I was just reminded by that tonight, because I look at what was going on with in the Church of Nigeria, which has not been poisoned and has been a long stalwart of, resisting this progressive turn. And it was beautiful to behold. I mean, the way that the church is set up, the way that the there was people in different positions of authority. We heard from the I met the head of the Fathers Guild. There's, like, a guy that runs, like, the Fathers Guild. There was the woman that runs the women of the province, or whatever. She was one of the main, or she was, one of the lectors, and then we have the from the choir to the I mean, it's just beautiful to behold. And I said, this is the type of church from which, if the church is the hub of the society from which, the family and the state are at least kept in check and or formed, well, then this is how this works. That's why I was rethinking my Erastianism, because essentially in the U.S., say what you want, but the Episcopalians ran the country for centuries, and had good model to follow. They didn't have a House of Lords. We had a Senate, but, like, there was some overlay there that capitalized on a sense of noblesse oblige from at least nominally Christian people. And there was a dance there that was beautiful, that actually created Western civilization as we know it. And I think there's nothing less than the sustenance of Western Christendom, to the extent that it is that it is reshaping some of these former Commonwealth countries. That's what they're putting in jeopardy, in my opinion. And call that what you want, Christian nationalism or whatever. But, like, the worst thing for people, like, again, my buddy Campeche, Bishop Campeche, would be if all of a sudden GAFCON didn't exist and he's out there trying to evangelize, teach, and preach with, in the background, you've got Mullally and whatever that guy's name in the Episcopal Church is, and
John
the
Rowe.
whatever, like, you've got them as your actual spiritual, in some sense, authority, or at least colleague. And that would be really destructive, and we, of course, we've heard that for decades too. The people are out there trying to evangelize young men in particular for Christianity or Islam, and then they can, pull up Bishop Spong's book or pull up Gene Robinson and say, we don't have any interest in being a part of this. And it's like, well, we have something entirely different for you, which is the faith once for all delivered to the saints. And so let's talk.
I'm funny you mentioned that. I'm right now we're teaching I'm going through a series on ancient heresies in our Christian education course, and we finally worked our way up to to Arianism, which we'll start this Sunday. And the political situation around the empire right after the First Council of Nicaea in 325 is really interesting because the emperor who is there ruled in favor of the Orthodox side because the vast majority of the bishops did. But then afterwards, very soon afterwards, you had a kind of a very strong pushback on the part of Eusebius of Nicomedia, who's right there, very close to where the imperial seat will soon be moved to Byzantium or to Constantinople, and so he's Eusebius of Nicomedia. He's a Arian or Arian sympathetic, and so he's got
He's
all
Arian
the
adjacent.
Arian adjacent, right? So
Yes.
he's got all this influence over the emperor, which he begins to exercise, and as the emperor is swayed, well, a lot of other bishops begin to be swayed too because this is legitimacy. This is we have to the emperor now that we've hitched our wagon to the empire, which I'm not saying is a bad deal necessarily, but there's where the church's center is, legitimacy is, and so you only had at various points between 325 and 381, the Council of Constantinople, where the Nicene Creed that we say was finally finalized, you have periods of time where the Orthodox side is in a distinct minority, and Athanasius contra mundum, Athanasius against the world. Bishops all over the world were siding with the semi-Arians, I guess you might call them. I guess you do call them that. It seems like it is almost analogous to that in some ways
Interesting.
because these bishops and primates who have Orthodox sentiments, there is a sense still of legitimacy around Canterbury. And so I think that is swaying
Certainly in the
many of them.
worldwide media there is. I mean, there was just an article today that had Dame Sarah Mullally on the cover and then referred to what's happening in Abuja as some kind of rebellion. So clearly the framing
That's right.
exists where
Well, we know how
she's
the
the
first one
stalwart.
went, so we can give them some encouragement there.
But all that's to say, that's why I'm not really concerned about the numbers, because even if it is just us and Nigeria, which I think it's gonna be more than that, but let's just say it's us and Nigeria and Rwanda, it doesn't matter because this is orthodoxy, and in the end of the day, Jesus is
That's
gonna
right.
protect his church. We're gonna thrive, and they're gonna die, and so it's just a matter of sticking it out during the times of minority and exile, I guess you could say. So I think it's I don't like the numbers game, especially when it comes to is this true or is this false? Is this
Right. That's right.
or is this knowledge? It doesn't make sense to me. I understand the money game, but I think you're right. The reason I was thinking along these lines, I think you're right, JD. There's more than just money in play here. There's also legitimacy. There's the question
Well, and I
of
think there's some naivete also to the, like I said before, to the extent that they can insulate themselves from the cancer, from the slow poison. And I think that, I would say in general, like for most of what the West is currently exporting should be rejected out of hand. Like the idea of women's rights being abortion and contraceptives, that's like synonymous. The idea that freedom means sexual promiscuity and porn. The idea that, all these ideas that are, I'm not saying that's all the West is, but like to the extent that our embassies were flying pride flags over their embassies, like if I were a primate in Malawi or whatever, I'd be like, get that out of my church, and so to yoke yourself, you can't do much about it in a U.S. embassy in your country, but if you're a primate, you can certainly keep that aspect of whatever is being brought through out of your church. And yet they want to somehow basically bring the same thing in with churches, like through the door of the sanctuary and celebrate it, at least by extension or by association. And I just can't, again, back to, well, if you want to talk numbers game, just look at how well that's worked, and again, I'm not saying that there's obviously there's, which we've already talked about here, at least I have with some people, they are still concerned about the prosperity gospel is a big problem in Africa, and then animism, sort of people going back to sort of pagan worshiping demons, and so they've got that in front of them, but one of the things they don't have is their own church leadership kind of sitting down and cozying up to open heretics. I mean, that's just what they and you know, and sort of you can see the courage and the conviction that that brings down through the ranks, you know, down to the local clergy, the humble parish priests like we are. That's what I keep introducing myself as. Like I'm just a lowly parish priest in the middle of nowhere, Michigan. So, yeah, I don't know why I'm here either, but there you have it. So.
Do you have any idea about who the front runners for the
I was just going to ask
archbishop?
this.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
No,
You know,
fine.
I don't. I can. I
Scuttle,
could.
what's the scuttlebutt?
I'll have more insight after this because we're going to go down and spend some time with some of the people. You know, take your collars off and just sort of, you know,
Where the
talk
real
brass tacks.
conversations
That's
happen.
right.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything. I haven't even actually, to be honest, I didn't even know that was a part of what we were doing here. And so,
If
do you have
Anglican
thoughts?
history is to be believed, you should hang out in the stairwells. Apparently, that's where all the big things go down.
Or things get left on copiers too. Remember
That's
that?
right. That's
Things
right.
get
Yeah.
that's right. Somebody's like plan, roadmap plan, for. So yeah. So I'll keep you updated. It'll be
I mean,
interesting to see.
there aren't that many officially committed provinces to the global Anglican communion at this point, right? So there can't, whoever is elected chairman, we can assume will either be from one of those provinces that's already fully committed or will be by their election fully committing their
Right.
province.
Yeah,
Right.
so I don't know. I mean, you could imagine Nigeria, Rwanda. I mean, we've already mentioned some, you know, the ACNA for that matter. I mean, we basically are a GAFCON province at this point still,
Yeah, we are.
which is fine. So,
I think we're out of the running though, because you have to have a sitting archbishop to be, I think you have to have a sitting primate, and we don't have one. I mean,
it would be weird if they called on Steve Wood to be the ch chairman of
that's fine.
GAFCON.
I'm going to write your name in, Matt. I'm going to write your name. Finally
I'd be
get
happy
you
to
out
be
of ink. And that's right. That's right.
Archbishop of the world.
So we got, so I have a story, an amazing story that I should tell you about. So a woman from Leipzig that I met was a, she was a hardcore devout atheist in the German variety, you know, Marxist, this is her talking. I should interview her. So she was in London. And as she said, you know, living the Frau life, she had a child but no husband, and she had a career and was just kind of, you know, blissfully ignorant of and rejective of Christianity. So she was an artist, and so she's doing decoupage, you know, the things with little pieces of paper. So she was looking for a specific color in a used bookstore and happened upon a book with very thin pages that is a blue tint. Well, it turns out to have been a Bible. So in the middle of her doing her decoupage, she pulls out 1 Corinthians 14, where Paul tells women to be quiet and cover their heads in church. And it enrages her so much that she started a journey for like the next 5 years of like trying to figure out who is this, what is this terrible teaching, and what is this? And so you can see where this is going. Long story short, she's now like one of the delegates from the diocese in Europe,
That's
and is
amazing.
like a committed Christian who just happens to be a vocal and staunch complementarian, like up and down the line, in a dramatic change of turn of events. And so I was just listening to her over breakfast this morning because I was trying to work on my German again, and I was like, "I'm sorry, we can't speak German anymore. I need to hear what you are having to say in English because I want to make sure I get this story right." But it's people like that all over the world who otherwise, if it weren't for the ACNA, if it weren't for GAFCON, if it weren't for some global faithful presence, they possibly, well, they wouldn't hear the gospel from many of the dioceses of Europe. I wouldn't, some would say all that I served with. You know, they would hear all about love and justice and, you know, and brotherhood of man and all this stuff, but they wouldn't actually hear the gospel. And so I think, you know, to your point, Matt, I mean, you know, this Leipzig English Church, I mean, Leipzig's where Bach's from. I mean, there are churches all over the place in there, and yet there's one church at the very least that we know is preaching, you know, 45-minute exegetical sermons from the Bible and Anglican liturgy, and is converting people. And so it's like, well, you know, I want to be a part of that. And to your point again, Matt, it doesn't really bother me about how many people are. I mean, I'd be happy if it was us in Nigeria again, you know, ACNA or the Anglican Church of Nigeria in America or whatever, like whatever you want to call it. And so, you know, but it is, I think it's sobering to a certain degree, is that, you know, this is going to be probably the walk of our lifetimes. And we may not see, you know, we may not see what would look like official realignment and sort of down the line, every canon's changed, every legal document signed, every name has been reincorporated. But we may see more of that than we expected. And so, I think whatever, I mean, I'm expecting to leave redoubled in my encouragement about the project, and also hopefully revitalized in my own personal parish ministry for this movement that we're a part of. I get to hang out with Kevin tomorrow, Kevin, the real journalist,
Cool, yeah.
and then the Nigerian state TV crews are here, and so I've got my
Okay.
little press badge, and I'm like, "Pardon
Awesome.
me, gentlemen. Excuse me, Your Grace. I've got a cutting story that I a breaking news story that I've got to get into."
I just imagine you as Wayne trying to get backstage at the Alice Cooper concert.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm thinking. It's a combination of that, and then the editor of the Daily Planet and Superman. Sort of, those are my
This
two.
is but this is like
Those
hey,
are
this
my
is vintage.
two.
This is vintage Stand Firm. This is what we did, like in 2006 and 2009. We were press. We
Yeah.
didn't go. We went as press, and we covered it as a news organization. We just stopped being a news organization. We restarted. So, but this is kind of nice. It's cool.
Yeah,
So.
I only forgot. I did forget my microphone, so that was the only negative. But I was reminded I didn't have them in Kigali either, and it worked fine. So we'll figure it out. But yeah, keep praying. I mean, it's I feel we can't really go anywhere, so like
Yeah.
without escort. So I feel fine in respect to that. But pray for, much stranger things have happened than people over divinely ordained conversations and happenstance change their convictions or end up believing something that they didn't expect to believe. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And so,
Amen.
pray for Paul and for all the archbishops, for Bishop Dobbs, and we'll see. But it certainly, as I hoped, whatever happens, this will be a pivotal next step in the project that we have been committed to for a while now. So I'm glad I'm here.
Well, we will get this out on the feed ASAP, and then hopefully we'll hear from you maybe once or twice more. You can record something on your own. We will put that out on the feed. If you want to write something, we'll have that on the website, send photos, et
Okay.
cetera. We will be your conduit to the world, JD Koch.
Yeah, and you can
We're
and we can add we can pitch for Dominic Steele's here. He does the
Yeah.
Shepherd's Heart, and he like is putting a lot of energy and effort into this. And so I think if anyone's listening to this and wants the next cut,
Sure.
he's legit in that respect. So
Amen. Well, that's going to be all the time that we have today. Thanks for listening to Stand Firm. If you want to keep the conversation going, as always, you can be in touch with us, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to Matt Kennedy and JD Koch, live and in charge in Abuja, Nigeria. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.